Boker Tov world. Today's daf in Masechet Sanhedrin, brought to you from Yerushalayim Yir HaKodesh, is daf Chof Aleph. We are holding at that Halakha Mishnah. So now, continuing with the dinim of the Melech, remember that one of the important halachas about a Melech is lo yarbelo nashim. He's not allowed to have a lot of wives. Really has to limit himself to just 18 wives. Really, what a shame. Ella Shmonasai. Rabbi Yehuda Aimer, no, that's not true. He could actually marbe as many wives as he wants, ubovat shelo yemisirot et libo. Only in the event, since it says in the pasuk, lo yasur levavo. So according to Rabbi Yehuda, the pasuk is saying, when am I telling you that lo yarbelo nashim velo yasur levavo? But in the event that these are wonderful women that are actually helpful to him in Yorei Shamayim, so then there would be no Isser to be Marva. Rabbi Shimon Omer, no. Just the opposite. Hafilu achat meisirat lipo areza lo yisa'ena. The point over here is, lo yasurit levavo, is to tell me that a melech has to be very, very careful not to get the type of dangerous wife that would in any way influence him and hurt his malchus. But so you'll say, well, then if that's the case, if you can't even marry one that is of this kind of yasur levavo type, then why did the Torah say lo yarbelo nashim? That has got to mean that even if he's got the most wonderful woman in the world, you can only have 18 of them. So that's tell me, afilu ka Avigail, even Avigail who helped him not to fall into traps of Isser and so on, she too would be limited to 18. So this is a very strange kind of machlokas because it reverses what we know to be the case all over Shas. We've had so many times. It seems to be that Rabbi Yehuda is the one who is Dorish Taima Dekra. And he is saying that since the meaning of the Isser is because of the fact that the woman will be Mesira Dibavo, so then that means that if you find a woman that is actually not like that, you could have 1,000 wives too, but if they're the type of women that are helpful to you, so then it would be Mutter. But then that would mean that he takes the understanding of the reasoning, whatever the rationale is, that's what is the base of the halacha. And it's Rabbi Shimon who says no. Actually, the halacha is, even in the case of women who are wonderful, maximum 18. So that means that he does not hold that we can base the halacha on whatever reasonable rationale there is, right? Problem is that all over, it's exactly the opposite. We know that we have classic cases where it's exactly the opposite, in which it's always Rabbi Shimon who is Darish Taima Dekra. And here is a great example. I'll bring you one right now. Vayibcha Shamina Ladatanya. Almana ben shi'aniya ben shi'i ashira ein mimashkenim ota. So the Torah says not to be mimashken a woman who is an almana. Now, we know there's an interesting halacha that this may be nogeya, and that's because since it says that Hashiv Tashiv lo et ha'avot kivo Hashemesh v'shachav b'simato v'rachat. So we have two psukim to tell me that I have to return, if I took a mashkon, I have to return that mashkon when it's needed. Let's say it's a mashkon of somebody's pajama, you have to return it to them in the nighttime. If it's a mashkon of somebody's coat, then you have to return it to them in the daytime. But the Torah says that in any event, it seems to be saying that you're not supposed to take a beged almana. So what does that mean? When it says, lo tachbo beged almana, that is dependent on this issue. Why? Because it's according to Rabbi Shimon, according to Rabbi Yehuda, it's not dependent. When Torah says, don't do it, don't do it. It's none of your business why it is that you don't do it. But according to Rabbi Shimon, and here's the classic example, the reason is obvious, isn't it? The Torah is telling me that you're not allowed to be mamashken, a beged of an almanah, because then you're going to have to return that beged to her. So if she's a rich almanah, and you don't have to return. She's got 100 pairs of pajamas, so you don't have to return her pajamas. In that case, what's the problem? You can be mamashkin her just like anyone else. The reason, obviously, says Rabbi Shimon, that the Torah is saying not to take her pajamas is because it's not going to do her reputation much good to have a man come to her door every night with a pair of pajamas, is it? So therefore, the Torah said, don't take the beged of an almanah. She doesn't have a husband. She's living alone. And we don't want to give her a bad name, right? So hachikam, the whole point over is, I mean, we understand what he means. Atamasiya Shem Rabbi Shkenotea. What exactly does that mean? Michael Omar, he's saying that when it says viata, means shata chayav lachzir, meaning mitol shata memashkena. If you go ahead and you take from her any type of security for a loan, so then ata chayav lachzir, you're going to have to give it back to her. And that means atamasiya Shem Rabbi Shkenotea. People are going to see this guy coming into her house every day, and they're going to say, this is a little bit hanky-panky. And because of that, she gets a bad reputation. So that's clearly what the Torah means. But if she's rich, you're not going to have to give it back. And therefore, there should be clearly that it's Rabbi Yehuda is the one who is not Darish Taimed Ikra, and it's Rabbi Shimon who is Darish Taimed Ikra. So why over here is it different? Says the Gemara, you're 100% right. It is different, because the point is that normally, the Alma, it's Rabbi Yehuda is the one who is not Darish Taimed Ikra. But over here, since the Torah says what the reason is, I don't have to be Darish Taimed Ikra. So in other words, the point is that if the Torah doesn't give a reason, so then we have a machlokes about whether we have a right to provide a reason. But if the Torah provides a reason, so then that reason would be actually a basis for the halacha. And it would be telling me, don't take too many wives because they will turn your heart away. But if they won't, so then there's no issue, right? So Shani Yochanan Mefarish Taimed Ikra, the Torah is basically saying, Lo Yarbelo Nashim. Why? V'lo Yosur Levavo. But in the event that his heart will not be turned away from the Lord, so then there would be no problem. Rashenkin Rabbi Shimon says, on the contrary, I would have known myself that the reasonable rationale for this, not to have a lot of wives, I mean, what's your business how many wives he has? The point is that for a king to have a lot of wives that could influence him is very dangerous. So I would have said that on my own. So here, why did the Torah have to say it? That's the point. So Ba'alma, I would have said the Taimed Ikra on my own. In which case, if the Torah would simply have said, Lo Yarbelo Nashim. So Lo Yarbelo Nashim, I would have known myself. It doesn't have to give me the reason. I have enough brains to understand that many wives could be dangerous for a king. So Anamina, I would have said this to myself. Why not? Matam Lo Yarbe. Clearly, Mishum de Lo Yasur. And then the Torah goes out of its way to tell me, Lo Yasur? What is that supposed to mean? It wasn't necessary to tell me, and if I could have figured it out myself, therefore it must be coming to tell me that there's a new Isser here, that if there is a woman who may come to actually be Mesira, then he shouldn't marry her. And that's telling me a new halacha, Lo Yasur Lamale, to teach me, Afilo Achat Mesirat Libo. He cannot marry her if she would turn his heart away. I see that Ori is scandalized over here with the thought that there could be such women. So that teaches me that even a single one, in which case, why does it have to say Lo Yarbe? And it's not true Lo Yarbe, because now you're telling me there's a separate Isser of Lo Yasur. Lo Yarbe must mean under any and all circumstances. Lo Yarbe. Afilu. That would mean even the very best, the maximum is 18. Now, what's interesting is that the way the Gemara comes out over here, it seems to be a binary consideration. In other words, either you're going to be Dorish the time of the Gra, and therefore, if it says it, it's telling you that you are not supposed to be Dorish the time of the Gra in this case, but you're supposed to expand on it. Or we would say that even where it doesn't say the time of the Krah, then we will actually be Darish time of the Krah. But according to this, There's no one that would say that it's not relevant to the halacha if there is a time of dikra. See what I mean? In other words, no matter how you look at it, either it's adding that you can't even have one woman that is maseir, or in the case that I'm saying that it's very, at the very least, it's providing me for a time of dikra. But there's no, if the Torah says it, I have to apply it in some way. The problem is that the Rambam paskins that it makes absolutely no difference. The din of the 18 is across the board. You're limited to 18. There's no special halacha of meisirot et libavot, which means that there seems to be a third shita here. The third shita is that it's not simply a question of whether we have a right to supply the rationale. The question is whether a rationale makes any difference. That would be the other shita. And therefore, the Rambam is paskening, neither is true. We do not utilize a rationale, whether we supply it or whether the Torah supplies it, to define a halacha. The halacha is as stated, and therefore, he paskens across the board. Now, the question is, where do we get this idea of 18? Hani shmona esrei minolan. Where do we get 18 from? Dichtiv vayivaladu leDavid banim beChevron. So David HaMelech's children that were born in Hebron while he was the Melech there, before he moved to Yerushalayim, and it lists, Vayhi Bechoro Amnon, the oldest was Amnon, who was born to Ahinoam Yisraelit. Next to him came Chilav, who was born to Avigail, Eshet Naval HaKarmelin. Then his third child was Avshalom, who was born to Ma'acha. And then it came Harvi'i, was Adoniel ben Chagit. Number five was Shvatya ben Avital. And number six was Yitra'am. And he was born to Egla, Eshet David. And then it says, Ela Yuldula David beChevron. And when Nosan Hanavi comes to David HaMelech to give him the message from HaKadosh Baruch Hu that he's going to be the Melech, and so on and so forth, he says, V'imit me'at v'yosif alecha chayina v'chayina. And if this is not enough for you to have these six women, I'll double that again and again. Kahina v'chayina. So that gives us three times six. So kahina, one, the first kahina is another six, and the second kahina is yet another six, which means, b'sach hakol, three times six would be 18. Atke Floravina, how do you know it means that? Maybe kahina would mean, I'll double that for you, which means another 12, and then I'll double that, which would mean esrim v'arba. So why do you just assume that each kahina is the same number of the six? And indeed, there is such a shita. Tanya name hachi, lo yarbelo nashim, not like our Mishnah, but rather, yoter me'asrim v'arba, not more than 24 wives. Okay, that seems to be this svara of Ravina. And I got another issue for you. Rabbi Akiva is Doresh Vav, right? There's an extra Vav here. Kahina v'chahina. So that should double it yet again. So according to the Mandi Amar, who's Doresh Vav, that would give you Arbaim v'shmona habit. And we find that shita too. Tanya namiyachi, lo yarbelo nashim. Richie, now is the time to come in when we're up to 48, man. Lo yarbelo nashim means yoter mi arbaim v'shmona. No more than 48 wives. You'll have to be satisfied with that. Anyway, so why is our Tana, you don't, can't handle it, Rich? You got your hands. You got your hands full.
I'm sure it would have been a little bunch. You know, you have to have a secretary to keep track.
All right, it's not a chiyuv. V'tana didan my time, eh? So why, in fact, does our Tana say only 18? Why doesn't he actually understand kahina to be a doubling? Omer of Kahana, because he compares the Kehina Batra, the Kehina Kama, he considers it to be a Hekesh. Just like the first Kehina means six, the second Kehina also, each one of them means six, which gives you get a total of only 18. Now the question is, the one wife that we were discussing yesterday, isn't listed, and that was Michal. Remember, Michal, we said yesterday, David HaMelech had identified as this is my wife, Ishti Michal. So why are we saying six? It would mean that there would have to be seven. Omar Rav, Egla, that we never heard of before, Egla is Michal. And the reason that she's called Egla is because Chaviva Alav Ke'egla. She was his little lammy. You know, that used to be in English. Little lammy used to be my little sweetheart. So in Hebrew, it was also called an Egla, my little lamb, you know. So Chaviva Alav Ke'egla. It's a calf, not exactly a lamb, but, you know, basically, it's the same idea as my little lamb. Listen, Shimshon says that. When Shimshon wants to talk about the people that have been busy with his wife while he was gone, he says, if you hadn't been plowing with my calf, so he's referring to his little calf. Okay, so we see that we can use terms of endearment as calf. But wait a minute. How could you say Egla was Michal? It says over here that Egla had the son, and over here the son was Yitra'am, but it says in the Pasuk, Ulamichal bat Shaul, lo hayala yalet ad yomota. Actually, Michal never had any children. So it doesn't make any sense that Egla is the mother of Yitra'am if she is Michal. Omer of Chista, it only says ad yomota until the day she died. But the day she died, she had a child, Yitra'am. No, excuse me. When did she die? She died after they were already living in Yerushalayim, because the entire event that brought about the fact that she never had any children was the day that David HaMelech had brought up the Aron HaBrit into Yerushalayim, and he was making, as far as she was concerned, he was making an ass of himself, dancing around like a Bresel V'chosid around the Aron HaBrit. This is Bizyenis. What do you think you are, a Breslover? And because of that, she was Mavaza, her husband, David HaMelech, in her heart. It says, Vativa Zlo B'liba. Because of the fact that he had given himself over completely to dancing in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and he didn't care what it was that he looked like. And because of that, she was punished. But that was much later. That was after David HaMelech had moved to Yerushalayim, was already accepted as king by everyone, after the 7.5 years that he was in Hebron, right? And the list was the list in Hebron. So it says over there, Michal had Yitra'am before that event ever happened. So therefore, ask the Gemara, Michte, Bani Mecha Kachashiv, where were these children? In Hebron, which was before David ever became Melech B'Yerushalayim. It was afterwards that the Nosan Anavi came to him and told him about the Kaina V'Kaina. But the whole Maaseh of Michal, in which she was punished for not to have children, that was in Yerushalayim. Dichtivu Michal bat Shaul nishkefa ba'ad ha'chalon. Vatera et haMelech David mifazez umechaker lifnei Hashem, vativez lo b'liba. So it says she saw him jumping and dancing in front of Hashem through the window, and she makes fun of him afterwards. She says, what a lovely day this is when you look like one of the kitchen staff. Yomer of Yudav Yitemer of Yosef. Indeed, she kalta Michal l'mitrafsa. She got what was coming to her. So she couldn't have had a child on the day that she died. That wouldn't have helped us in understanding Yitra'am. Sorry. I said it backwards. The point is that before the event with the Oren HaBris in Yerushalayim, she had children. When it says she didn't have children ad yom mota, it means from that day on, she never had children. Or some say it means that even the children that she had before died before her death. But in any event, Bikan ve'elech lo avi lo ayala. Okay, but she did have this child, Yitra'am, in Hebron, which was well before that. But wait a minute. It says, Vayikach David od pilakshim v'nashim mirushalay. I don't understand. In the Seder HaKsuvim, that we take a look at how this is presented, it says that he had these six, Bechevron. And it says there, before it talks about Nosan Anovi coming at Saint Kahina Vikaina, it says that he took other Pilakshim and Nashim from Yerushalayim. So then if later Nosan Hanavi comes along and says Kehena V'Kehena, then it ought to include those additional Pilakshim and Nashim Birushalayim. Not only 3 times 6, but 3 times 6 plus these Pilakshim and Nashim, right? So then how did you get 18 now? No, the point, the fact that the Pasuk is structured that way doesn't matter. Those 18 actually included the Pilakshim V'Nashim Yerushalayim. The fact that the Pasuk is recording what Nosan HaNavi said later is because that's the Seder Aksuv. In other words, first we talk about there were 6 sons that he had from these 6 wives that he had in Hebron. And when he went to Yerushalayim, by the way, he had other. And then the Kehena V'Kehena was a reference back to the Nashim in Hebron. But the additional ones that he was Memale, that was part of the 18. And therefore, the Mashmut of the Gemara is that the Pilakshim and the Nashim are both part of the actual count of 18. According to the Rambam, means Gipshutai, that 18 is comprised of even Pilakshim, not only Nashim. The Ravid argues on him, but the Pashtus of the Surya seems to be saying it the way the Rambam says. My Nashim and my Pilakshim, that once we're on the topic, what exactly is the definition that would allow us to understand what is a Pilegesh, in English, a concubine, a woman that is miyuchad for a particular man, and what is a wife that is miyuchad for a particular man? Omer Vira Marav is 2 girsaot over here. Nashim bichtuva v'kidushin, Pilakshim b'lo kituva v'lo kidushin. So some have the girsa b'lo kituva, but with kidushin. Okay, so there's actually a machlokas rishonim about this issue, and it's pashtus the way our sugya is saying it according to the girsa that we have over here. A pilegesh is simply a person who has given herself over to a particular non-formal relationship with a man, and they're living together, but there was no marriage at all. There was no kiddushin, and there's therefore no ksuva either. And this is how the Rambam paskins. Mashenke, a woman, as a wife, has both a kiddushin and a ketuvah. So that means that one relationship, indeed it's a very specific relationship, it's not the iser of kedesha, according to most Rishonim, because a kedesha would mean a woman who's dedicated to sex, not to a man. Mashenken, a pilegesh, is dedicated to a particular man. Om revyut om rav. Arba meot yeladim hayu lo ledavid, v'chulam b'nei yifat toar hayu. We're talking about the total number of children. Rashi understands this to mean, not Rashi over here, but Rashi elsewhere says that when it says he had 400 children, it doesn't mean that they were his particular children. It means that he kept 400 children that had been fathered by his army from Yifot Toar. Yifot Toar, remember, are these beautiful women who were impregnated in the course either of a battle in which they were raped. That's Machlokas Rishonim, whether if you're allowed to impregnate a woman in actual battle or whether it means they were taken afterwards. But in any event, they were, the Pashtas, not Jewish. So these were children of a first relationship with these women. And he kept them specifically to be part of the army. And these were all gorgeous kids because these women had been absolutely superstars. As Rashi explains, they always go out to show them their beauty off to the soldiers and to make out with the soldiers. This is common in war, even Bizman Hazeh. And so, therefore, he kept them specifically to look like movie stars and to look like enforcers, dangerous kind of kids. So they were all Megadlei Bluriot, tell you. They all had these long ponytails, and they looked like they had come off movie sets. Mekulan Yoshvim Bekronot Shel Zahav. They were all sitting there in these gold-plated automobiles, you know, or tanks. And they were the ones that were in front of all of the other soldiers, Ma'alchim Barosh Gayasot, because that way, when the Goyim would see them coming, first of all, it would serve them to remember very well where these kids came from. These are from your wives, basically. So it reminds them that maybe it's not such a good idea to fight with the Jews. And furthermore, it actually made them respect the army of the Jews because they were looking like them. And that's the type of thing that they respect. These were the enforcers of Beit David. So it was very kedai to keep them around, but dafka like goyim. Vomer of Yerom Rav, you should know that this was not all that strange in the house of David, because David HaMelech himself had children that were from Yifas Tamar. As a matter of fact, the famous Tamar was the daughter of Ma'acha, and she was the daughter of Yifas Tor. Shenemar, we see that clearly, because remember the whole story of Amnon and Tamar? So Amnon and Tamar, what happened was that the son of David, Amnon, had this unbelievably irresistible romantic attachment to what appears to be his sister, Tamar. And so he comes up, a friend of his comes up, gives him this idea. Why should you suffer, pretend that you're ill, and ask that Tamar come and that she helps you get better, and she makes you pancakes every morning, and that'll give you lots of opportunity to have some fun with Tamar. So when he wants to rape her, she says to him, "V'ata daberna al-melech, ki lo yimna'eni mimeka. I'd love to be married to you. Why don't you ask the king? And he wouldn't stop me from marrying you." Now, that's insane. What do you mean he wouldn't stop? She's his sister. So, if you think that Tamar's mother was actually married to David, so how in the world, how would his sister have been allowed for him to marry? So, obviously, she was conceived as a Yifas Tor still, before she had been Midgayeret. And she wasn't really related to David Mitama Halacha, and therefore she was not the sister of Amnon, and he would have been allowed to marry her. Take a look at the Pesukim over there, once we're on the topic. Amnon Rea. So Amnon had this friend whose name was Yonadav ben Shima'a, who was Achi David, and Yonadav was a very smart guy. Very smart guy to do bad things. Ish chacham lo risha. That's people who are very, very smart when it comes to figuring out how to mess up. So he says to Amnon, "Look, you're looking miserable with this infatuation that you've got. Come on, man. Madu ata kacha dal ben amelech. I'll give you a good idea. There's a very simple way to get Tamar into your clutches. Your father's going to come visit you, and you pretend to be sick. Your father comes to visit you because you're so desperately ill. You tell your father, you know, I need fresh pancakes every day. That's the only thing that's going to make me well. That way, I'm not going to be able to send you pancakes all the way from, you know, the pancake shop. I mean, it'll be cold and then they're blechy by the time they get to you. You tell them, no, I can't eat. I have to have fresh pancakes. Okay, so the only one I know that can make me fresh pancakes the way I like, oh, is my sister Tamar. All right. So he'll send you Tamar. And then she'll be making you pancakes. And that way she'll be a classic nurse situation. You know, the nurse always would fall in love with the guy. You'll end up in bed with Tamar. So you pretend to be sick. Shkava mishkavcha. Hitchal, make yourself sick. And say, Vastale nayat abirya, I need her to make the pancakes for me. So sure enough, she goes, Vatikach et hamasret, she takes right there in his bedroom, she takes the pan and she pours out the pancakes, Vatitzok lefanav, so it should be super duper fresh pancakes. Omer of Yerom Rav, shastol minetigo. So she made him stir fries, pancakes, whatever, okay. Now, all of a sudden, it says that after he rapes her, and she's telling him, listen, you can marry me, you know. He throws her out of the house, and he hates her guts. He hates her guts. Now, why does he hate her guts all of a sudden like this? My time up. Omer of Yitzchak, because what happened was, is that she actually strangulated his penis. Nima nikshalo vasato kruchavcha. This sounds very strange, however, you look up in the NIH, you'll see that this is not as rare as you think. So a pubic hair can get tangled around a penis and end up strangulating and killing the actual living penis. That's what happened. So he was furious. What do you mean he was furious? It's not her fault. What did she do? I don't understand. No, she did it on purpose. Kashralo Nima, she actually did that on purpose. And that made him basically, now here's the beautiful way the Aruch HaShulchan, the Aruch Luler explains this whole story. She wanted him to marry her, right? So he refused to marry her because Gufa, she was actually not really Jewish. She had come from this Yifat Torah. He says, look, I can't marry somebody like you. So she figures, okay, if he would have a din of a Krut Shavcha, so then if his penis was damaged, he wouldn't be allowed to marry a normal girl, right? He would only be allowed to marry a Giora. So because of that, she figured, okay, look, what am I supposed to do? The guy wants to throw me out into the street after raping me because I'm not good enough for him. So I'll be the only one good enough for him. That's why she did that. Okay, it says the Gemara, but how is that possible? Any? Vadorash Rava didn't, what is this? Your dad had a Hatzola guy come for such a thing, you're saying?
And he got his penis stuck in his zipper, and he ended up in the ICU from us.
Oh, in a zipper. Okay, I mean, that's a little bit more reasonable. But anyway, but as I say, in the NIH, you can actually see many case studies in this, and it's not as rare as it sounds. So anyway, how is it possible, since Rofa said, it says that the Goyim, Novi Yecheskel says, that the Goyim started to recognize that you are the most beautiful among all of the Amim. What is that? That's because Jewish girls were famous for not having underarm hair and not having pubic hair. So how could Tamar have actually strangled him by pubic hair if she wouldn't have had any? I know Tamar wasn't Jewish. You forgot. Tamar was a Bat Yifat Torah Havet. So she was okay. She did have pubic hair. Okay, so getting on into the Maisa. So it says that Tamar took these ashes, put it on her head, Vatikach Tamar Efer al Rosha. She took her Ketonet Pasim, and she ripped her Ketonet Pasim. We talked about the relationship of the Ketonet Pasim of Tamar with Yosef recently when we had learned the Parsha. And Tana Mishmeder Reb Yeshua ben Korcha, what she did is she went out and she publicized what happened. And she opened up a Me Too thing on TikTok or whatever it is they use. And she wanted everybody to know what happened to her. Why did she do that? Because Geder Gadol Gadrata Marbo Tasha'a, she made a tremendous tikkun in Klal Yisrael by publicizing what happened. Because people were saying, wow, Livnot Malachim Kach, that kind of thing can happen in a royal family. You can imagine Livnot Ed Yotot, Alachat Kama Vekama. And if a woman of such tzniut, like Tamar, who was known to be a very modest person, Varaya, she's going around in order to achieve this, it happens to somebody like that, Liprutzot Alachat Kama Vekama. So it could definitely happen to just the type of girls that hang around in general. This was a amazing limud that people took very much to heart. And not only was it a public relations thing, it ended up becoming a takona in Klal Yisrael. Om Rav Yehuda Amar Rav, it was because of Tamar that Bo'ota Sha'a Gazru Ala Yichud Ve'Ala Pnuya. It seems to be saying that they made two takonas, that you're not allowed to be alone with a married woman, and you're not allowed to sleep with a pnuya, an unmarried woman, even though she's not an erava. What? Isn't yichud a diuraisa? No, when it says diuraisa, the Rambam says yichud is actually mi kapola, because it's a remez, but that doesn't mean it's not diuraisa. Many understand that even if it's a pikapola, it means that the drasha is a Kabbalah, but it still is a drasha that is built on the Arise. It doesn't necessarily mean it's only a remes. Some learn that Rambam means it's only a remes. But anyway, the Omer Rabbi Yochanan Mishum Rav Shimon Yehud Tzadok, where do we see a remes to Yichud in the Torah with an Erva? Shenamar ki yisita ka achicha ben imecha. It's a very strange pasuk. If your brother, who is the son of your mother, is going to be mesit you and say, let's go and be oved Elohim acherim. Well, it's very strange. What do you mean, your brother, the son of your mother? Why only the brother, a son of your mother? I mean, a son of your father wouldn't be mesit. A son of your father wouldn't be chayiv. Why does it say specifically a maternal brother? Lomar lecha. And it's coming to add a chiddush to you, that you could end up in a situation even with a maternal brother, which you would have thought that, how is it that you would end up with a maternal brother if it ended up that she was married now to your father and she had your brother had a different father. So then he would not be part of your family. Because how could he live with you in the house to be able to talk to you and to persuade you to go and worship Avodah Zarah? After all, he would now be in a situation in which his mother was an Erva to him, and she was actually not there with his father. So how was he in the house? Must be telling you that he could still be in the house, even though he's not allowed to sleep with his mother. So lomar lecha ben mityachen imimo, that in fact, even though she doesn't have the father with her, but nonetheless, he's allowed to be alone with his mother. And it specifies this in order to teach you that dafka, why would I think otherwise? Obviously, because you're not supposed to be alone with any other erva. That's the point. So the pasuk is by telling you, well, you should know you're allowed to be alone with your mother. That is coming to tell me that if it wouldn't be that it's your mother, you wouldn't be allowed to be alone. So ein acher mityachedim kol arayot shebat Torah. So what do you mean over here by saying they decided at that time to aser yichud if yichud was obviously aser? It's not that it comes from the best in a David. Ela ema. Gazru al yichud dipnuya, not two separate things, not al yichud va'al hapnuya, but that up until that time, the D'oraisa was only yichud with a woman who was prohibited as one of the arayos. At this point, they were gozer because of the fact that Tamar was unmarried and this had happened to her. So they were gozer not to allow men to be alone with a woman, even if she is actually muteret to him. Okay, once we're on this Ravuda Amarav, who was saying over in Yonim that came from the children of David, we have another Pirush of Ravuda Amarav, Adoniel ben Chagit mitnase lomar lemor ani emloch. So what does it mean when it says mitnase? He like was pushing it. In what sense pushing it? Om Ravuda Amarav melamich bikesh lohomo velo holamto. This tells us that he was trying to push his head into the crown of David. So what happened was that David and some of his children had a genetic mutation which allowed a particular crown to fit their shape of their skull because of what would appear to be like an indentation in the way that the skull was shaped. And if a person from that family was not roy to be the melech, he would be unable to actually fit that crown properly on his head. So Adoniel ben Chagit was pushing it. He was mitnase to pretend that it was fitting him, but it wouldn't fit. And then it says that Adoniel yaslo rechev ufarashim, he went ahead and he made these beautiful chariots with horsemen and 50 men that were running in front of him. So what is so great about 50 men who were running in front of him? When we find that Avshalom had 200 men, I mean, what's the big deal about 50? Myra Busa. Omer Viram Rav, Kula Nitule Tuchol, he made them. It says, Vayaz, he made the 50 men. How did he make the 50 men? He operated on their spleens, took out their spleens, and also took off the layer of the nerves on their skin so that when they would run, they would be able to run over, apparently they used to run barefoot, they would be able to run over any type of territory without feeling any kind of pain. So the part about taking out their spleens is very strange. They used to believe that the spleen actually made it more difficult for you to be a long-distance runner. I don't know where the marker for that idea is, because if anything, the spleen is generally considered to be useful for long-distance running, although there are long-distance runners who do not have spleens, who have to have their spleen removed. So it's not about I care, but I haven't seen anywhere an indication that somebody considers not having a spleen an advantage for running. But in any event, that apparently was the belief. And when it says vayas, it means that they were specifically manufactured runners. And now this brings us to Sir Richard. The next thing that we have about the Melech, after being told he's not allowed to have a lot of wives, is that he's not allowed to have a lot of horses. Lo yarbelo susim, he can only have enough for kedei merkavto. I mean, look, the kingdom, my kingdom for a horse, a kingdom needs horses, and a kingdom needs tanks, and it needs lots of chariots, but the Isser over here is only to have things for himself. But for his actual Merkava, which is part of the Tzorach of the Malchus, of course he can have. Hela kedei merkavto. It's lo yarbe lo susim. He shouldn't have any personal susim. The kesev zahav also, it says, lo yarbe lo. He shouldn't have personal money, lots of silver and gold. But he can have sufficient and taxed sufficiently for it. He can certainly maintain the money that he needs for the soldiers that are going to be occupying all of these horses and chariots. And another thing that he has to do is he has to write a Sefer Torah that is meant for him specifically, and we'll see what that means. And that Sefer Torah is his very special Sefer Torah of a Melech. That Sefer Torah, when he is Yotze L'milchama, he goes out to fight. He takes it with him. Nichnas, he comes back from the battle. He's bringing it in back with him. He sits down to give a din, Yoshev B'din, either because he's from Beis David, or he's giving a din maybe on Dinei Momenus, which is butter even for other Melachim. Meisev, he sits down to eat. He's got this Sefer Torah facing him. Shenemar Vaitaimo V'karabo. It should be with him, and he should be reading it every day of his life. All right, so let's take a look at the psukim that lie behind all of this. Tan Rabbon, lo yarbe lo susi. You might think that this means he's not able to have even horses for his own Merkava and Parashav. Talmud Lomar, no. Lo yarbe lo susim. Loli no marbets, only personal use that he can't have. Avo marbel kedei rigbo farashav, he can certainly have enough, whatever it takes. So then why does it say, ulo yarbelo susim? It means susim that are batlanim. They're not being used by the army. They're not being actively used in the kingdom. They're just there for his chashivas. That he's not allowed to have. How do we know that even a single sus that is not being used for some purpose other than to show off that that's included below Yarbe? Talmud Lomar, so it says over there, lo yarbe lo susim v'lo yashiva ta'am mitzrayma leman harbot sus. Why does it say leman harbot sus? Yafilu sus echad. That's why it uses the words, obviously. The real meaning of sus is that it's just, you know, the way to refer to many sus, because if it's susechot. But since it changes the language over here of lo yarbe susim leman yarbe sus, it's coming to tell me that even a single sus would be included. So if even a single sus is included, so then you're telling me that Afilo Susachad Batel is included in Lo Yarbe, why did it have to say at the beginning of the Pasuk Susim? That is coming to me something else. That's coming to tell me that every single sus that he's marbe, he's over on a different lav. It's not one lav for being marbe sus. Okay, now, I understand what you said before. You said, if it wouldn't have said lo yarbe lo, so what would you think? You said, well, you might think he's not even allowed to have a susim for kedei richbo or for a shav. That's impossible. Are you really saying that lav ochi would have been for that extra word of amin if you look at richbo for a shav, naimilo, a king? I mean, what kind of kingdom is it if it doesn't have any horses and chariots? I mean, it can't even defend itself. I mean, what kind of, that's not a kingdom. No, of course it doesn't mean that. Lo tzricha, I need the posek to say that you can have horses. That means lafushe, that you have to be able to have a lot of extra horses because you need to have replacements and redundancy in supplies. That's what it's saying. Bato doesn't mean that it isn't currently hooked up to a tank. The point is that it is not serving any type of military purposes. That's the idea. So it's coming to tell me that the low, if it wouldn't have said the low, that it's only for him that it's also, I would have said, okay, you can have do enough to support an army. But no, it's coming to tell me you can have plenty, even redundancy. That's why it says low. So that's lafushe. We have the same pasuk by the Kesev Zahav. Kesev Zahav lo yarbe lo. He's not supposed to have extra money. And you said, but he does have enough to pay for the expenses of the army. So the Braita puts it in the same way that we put it with the Susim. Kesev Zahav lo yarbe lo. Yochal afilu kedei liten aspanya. You might think he wouldn't even have enough to be paying for his soldiers. Talmud lomar lo. Lo ino marbe. Here we have the same question. That's ridiculous. You're seriously entertaining that without the words lo, I would really have said that a king is not allowed to tax. I say tax because some of the Rishonim specify that the only issue over here is in terms of tax. But, I mean, if he has money or people send him money, there's no issue in having money. Okay, that's could be a machlokas. I don't know for sure. But time it occurs, Rahman Allah, but Allah Vahi, you would say he wouldn't even be able to tax for gold and silver to pay for his soldiers? I mean, that's ridiculous. No, it means that you're allowed to have extra funds available in the treasury to be able to pay for soldiers that are currently not required, but you may have to call up the reserves. So that's what this low means. You're allowed to maintain reserves. Okay. So that means that every time that we have found low so far, binogea the susim and binogea the kesev zahav, it means bedavka low. So then how do you understand the other low? Lo yarbe lo nashim. Well, I mean, who else is he taking wives for? I mean, you don't have to say low over there. No, that's coming to tell me lo yarbe lo nashim. A king, he and only he cannot have a lot of wives. But suppose we're talking about Richie, and suppose he has to take off that cap and he's no longer a king. So lo means only for someone who is a king is usher, and he has to be limiting himself to 6, 12, 24, 48. But if he's not a king, then there's no limitation. So lo in that case doesn't mean personal. It means lo as a melech. Rav Yehuda points out, seems to be a contradiction, in how many horses did Shlomo HaMelech actually have? Because we have a contradiction between the Posek in Melachim and the Posek in Divrei HaYomim. So K'tiv, on the one hand, we find in Melachim it says, Vayila Shlomo Arabaim Elev Uravot Susim Lemerkava. So Shlomo HaMelech had 40,000 stalls of horses. And in the Rayomim it says, Vayila Shlomo Arbat Alafim Uriot Susim. He had 4,000. Well, how do we explain it? Is it 40 or is it 4? Well, it's quite clear. Im Arbaim Elefits Tablaotayum, if we understand Urvot, not to be the same as Uriot, so then that means if there were 40,000 stables, each one of them had 4,000 stalls. So kol echad ayubo 4,000 uravot. If, on the other hand, we're talking about 4,000 stables, then each one of them had 40,000 stalls. Now, that's a heck of a lot of horses. So, another stira, what's talking about Shlomo HaMelech, is that one pasuk says, Ein kesev nechshav bimei Shlomo mu'uma. So in Divrei Hayomim, it says that Shlomo HaMelech, in his days, silver was not even noticed. It was worthless. But in Melachim it says, "Vayitein haMelech et kesev et haKesev Yerushalayim kaAvanim." He spread around that silver like it were just stones. But I mean, that doesn't mean ma'uma. I mean, there's a difference between ma'uma and stones, which have some value. Ah, but you see, remember, there were different stages in Shlomo's life. First, he was a very good boy, and he never married that Bat Shlomo. So, the Pat Paro. So, Khan, Kodim Shanazah Shlomo Pat Paro. So, while he was a good boy, and he wasn't getting beaten up by his mother and so on. So, at that point, this Kesev was nothing. But after he took that moment, Khan Liacha Shanazah Shlomo Pat Paro, so then things went downhill, and suddenly silver was worth something, at least to buy stones with. Omer Rabbi Yitzchak, you know, at the moment that Shlomo HaMelech went ahead and married Bat Paro, that was the beginning of the end. The Malach Gavriel went at that minute, stuck a reed into the bottom of the sea, which from that point on, over the next thousands of years, was Mala Sirton. It actually started silting up, and eventually Rome wasn't built in a day, but it was built from that day. Because it was at that moment that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was ready to send Klal Yisrael into Golas. Because Bat Paro had brought along the orchestras for singing to Avodah Zarah and so on. And that caused, in the end, the Golas to come. Yomer Rabbi Yitzchak, Neimah Lo Nitkalu Ta'amei Torah, getting back to the idea of Ta'amei Likra, why doesn't the Torah tell us more of the reasons for the mitzvahs? Well, take a look. There were two times that the Torah did tell us the reasons, and look what tragedies they caused. Sharishtei nikraot nidgalut ha'aman, the iser that we had over here, of lo yarbelo nashim and lo yarbelo susim, and in both of them, Shlomo HaMelech ended up messing up his life. The first was lo yarbelo nashim. So Shlomo said, well, that doesn't apply to me. Ani arbev lo asur. I can handle these wives. What's 1,000 wives here and there? And I, therefore, it's not applying to me, this verse. And at the end, what does it say? Vayileid siknat Shlomo nashav itu et levavo. That in his old age, his wives actually caused him to be yasur. The other pasuk was, Lo yarbelo nashim. And Shlomo says, well, I mean, it says lo yarbelo nashim because he's going to end up sending a whole bunch of people to Egypt because that's where they have. I won't do that. Ani arbelo nashim. And what happened in the end? Atetzei merkava mimitzrayim b'shesh me'od, and so on. So in the end, it turned out that that's where his horses, Dafka, were coming from.